This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 23, Academy Awards preview, and your emails. He met her in the fall. He took her to a movie. And when they'd done it all, he took her to a movie. And from the hospital, he took her to a movie. Welcome to iFanboy Media Splode, episode 23. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And this is the Media Splode show unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. It's our monthly non-comics media show. Unlocked by the patrons, saved by the patrons. They continue to bring it to you every month. So thank you to the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy.
Very dramatic. And just to see the community rally behind the show, I want to thank you. I know Josh wants to thank you. Josh was really worried, right, Josh?
I was fretting.
And yep, I didn't sleep. I mean, seriously, getting like 11 o'clock a night calls from Josh saying, I don't know what I'm going to do if the patrons don't save the show.
I mean, we've had a lot of tough times over the past
couple years.
I mean, yeah. We're literally from the pandemic to war. And this was just the last step. I couldn't have taken it. It would have broken me. So,
yeah. So thank you, everybody, for saving Josh.
Yes, thank you for that. Again, thanks to the patrons. And so we're going to talk about things we watched, enjoyed. There might be spoilers in the conversation. Who knows? Sort of a freewheeling discussion. And we like to start off every episode by talking about what we've been enjoying, usually in television, but it can be anything in the last month since we last spoke. And why don't, Ron, you start us off.
I just want to caveat it that I only agree to come back to do this show if we can have a freewheeling conversation every time.
Yeah, it was structured before. We had scripts.
Yeah.
And there was no ad-libbing.
And I said, that's not going to work. You can't hold me back, Connor, with your regimented schedule.
Ron's a free spirit.
I'm a free spirit. I can't be held back.
I love this.
He's a sun child. He's a sweet sun child.
Time. Roll.
Just roll. So yeah, I'm drowning in things to watch and to do and stuff like that. But the ones I wanted to talk about this time around, I finished Around the World in 80 Days, the PBS show with David Tennant. It was lovely. I strongly recommend it if you're a Jules Verne fan. It was a lot of fun.
I'm sorry, Jules who?
Jules Verne.
He was.
It sounded like you said Fern.
Jules Verne.
Jules Verne. That's
the lesser
if
known Jules.
Houseplant. You should name it Jules Verne.
I'm going to do a newspaper strip called Jules Verne, and it's about a guy and his plant. Oh, and they go on adventures to the moon and to the center of the earth.
Yeah, but the plant is just like, couldn't give a shit.
Right, exactly.
I've taken you to the moon. I don't know. Where's my sunlight?
Anyway, but I want to talk about two things, and they kind of fold into one another. And they're mainly, this is like, everyone gets to listen to me talking to Josh. I started listening to a podcast called Where It Went, which is a podcast that is exploring every release by the record label Revelation Records. So if you're not familiar with it in the whole hardcore world, Youth of Today, Gorilla Biscuits, Sick of It All, Shelter.
Orange 9mm?
Orange 9mm, yeah. Judge, early Quicksand, stuff like that. The Revelation was the label that all that came out. Texas is the Reason records came out on Revelation. And so I started listening to it mainly to listen to the Texas is the Reason episodes, as well as the Gorilla Biscuits and stuff. Basically anything with Walter Schreifels in it. And so I haven't listened to every episode because they've done like 50 plus episodes so far and they're doing a whole bunch of bonus things. But I was listening to a bunch of episodes recently and it seemed like 3 episodes in a row. So that's my first thing, is go listen to the Where It Went podcast if you're into that kind of music. Pretty cool. But on that podcast, people just casually mentioned the City Gardens documentary, the City Gardens documentary. And I was like, what is that, right? And so I went and looked it up. And sure enough, in 2014, a documentary came out called Riot on the Dance Floor, which is the story of the venue City Gardens, which was located in Trenton, New Jersey. It opened in the early 80s, like 1982, and was open until 1996, and was like the stop for underground bands on tour in those years, not just punk and hardcore, but like Sinead O'Connor's first show in the States was at City Gardens. He booked Duran Duran before anybody knew who they were, like very active in the early kind of new wave scene in the early 80s. It was one guy, this guy Randy Now is his name, who did the booking from 82 to 96. And the documentary was a combination of like telling his story, but also telling the story of the venue. John Stewart was a bartender there, which I didn't know until I saw the documentary.
Is that why I know that name? I feel like I've heard that name before. And maybe he's talked about doing that before.
Yeah,
that
probably, yeah. I went to this venue once when I was like 14 or 15. Quicksand was playing the Roseland in New York City, and I begged my parents to let me go. And they wouldn't let me go into the city to go to the show. And so somehow me and my friends, we saw Quicksand was playing the next day in Trenton. And somehow I talked my dad into driving us to Trenton to go see the show, to take us to it.
Because you told him you'd go see some of the Revolutionary War sites, and he was like, let's do it.
No, but the thought was, we're not going to the city, we're just going to like the suburbs of New Jersey.
This sounds like Action Park all over again.
It does. And little did I realize is that like City Gardens was like worse than CBGB's as far as like I'm mortified now watching this that I brought my father to this venue, to this club.
That feels like that tracks. Like, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But it was and hey, I owe him. I thanked him after watching it. I'm like, listen, Dad, you took us this thing. I got to thank you. So he just sat by the bar. Maybe John Stewart served him. I don't remember.
What was the conversation like on the way home?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think we all slept.
Yeah. Did you have fun? What?
For some reason, I pictured when your dad took you to a thing that it was like daytime. Like you're all like, it's like 11 a.m. and you're on your way to the hardcore show.
Yeah, maybe. We probably left during the day.
Fair enough.
But so the documentary was really, really good. They got a lot of really good folks to talk about it in interview format. Josh, there is some primo Ian MacKay documentary scenes.
Yeah, you told me that he'd said something.
Oh, yeah. Fugazi played there early on, and he's got some great stories about playing there and like what he thinks of it and all this sort of stuff. And there's also some just good general Ian-isms about like touring and music, like not specific to this club. So, Josh, I strongly recommend you check it out.
Cool.
Henry Rollins is in it. Jello Biafra. Ween, the guy from Ween, apparently they were like a big local band.
Ween.
Milo from Descendants is interviewed in it, Josh. So like there's a lot of the folks that we really like from a music standpoint, but just also as like in telling the story of American music, this club is in the same vernacular as, you know, the CBGBs or the Whiskey or the Fireside Bowl in Chicago or these, you know, kind of these great venues that just don't exist anymore now. And so it definitely is a moment in time. And like I feel like the 82 to 96 is enough of a time span where you see like its influence on the music scene, but also how the music scene influenced it. And just like really, it was really well done. It's about 2 hours.
82 to 96, if you're into American, you know, indie and hardcore is kind of,
yeah,
that's all of it for the most part.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So strongly recommended. I enjoyed it. I didn't even know it existed. It came out, what, nearly a decade ago, nearly 8 years ago. It was good. So I'm glad I discovered it via that podcast.
Is that one of those things that like that the show is for? Like, hey, I randomly watched this decade old thing and I'm bringing it up now. I feel like you've served the purpose of the thing.
Well, yeah, I feel like we're always talking about like what's the new show or whatever. But like here's a case of like I went back into the archive and found something I didn't even know existed that is right up my alley that was enjoyable, which I think anybody could enjoy.
We talked recently about how TV is kind of back on an upswing right now.
It is.
There was a fallow period a few months ago where there wasn't, you know, we were just in between cycles. There wasn't a ton on. The vaunted Sunday night TV night was sort of not dead, but there would be one or two shows. But now, briefly, I just want to mention that Sundays are packed again. I've got 5 shows I watch on Sunday. I don't even have time to watch them all. I have to watch them throughout the course of the week.
I just love the idea of you up until 3 in the morning on Sunday nights.
I wish I was able to do that. I do not have the time for that anymore.
Time's got nothing to do with it.
Between Outlander's back, Billions, Winning Time, Super Pumped, Last Week Tonight's back, 60 Minutes, which is more important now than ever. Sunday nights are just crowded.
Back up. Why is 60 Minutes more important now than
ever? They're reporting on from Ukraine every week now.
Oh, okay. All right.
And there's nobody else who's got the budget to do that kind of thing in any kind of clout. It's like the last bastion of...
Is Morley Safer over there?
No, he's dead.
Is he? Oh, shit, I'm sorry. Yeah,
that's okay.
I don't know.
So anyway, Sundays are now back fully, but I wanted to talk about a Monday show. HBO's keep trying to make Monday happen.
Didn't it start as a Sunday show and they moved it?
No, it's always been Monday.
Oh, has it always been Monday? I thought it was on Sunday.
So. They released the new David Simon show on Monday. They did Chernobyl on Monday. They've been trying to make Monday also be a thing because they only can put so much programming out.
Before you get into this, Scott, let me ask you, is it working?
Well, I mean, I watch it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the clout that Sunday has, but, you know. People watched Chernobyl.
Chernobyl was great. I would give anything for another Chernobyl. I mean, not like...
This is the worst possible time to be saying that.
Ron, I guess I've got kind of good news for you. Because I don't think we've ever been closer.
In fact, about a week or two ago, we were really close.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
That's all we can do is make dumb jokes. So... The Gilded Age. We haven't talked about it. All three of us watched this show. We're recording this the day of the finale, so we haven't seen the finale yet. It will have come out by the time you hear this. But I love this fucking dumb show. Like, it's not a great show.
No.
It's Julian Fellowes, the mind behind Downton Abbey, and it's just, like, a little off. Like, clearly he's got, like, a crazy person's understanding of British aristocracy and upstairs, downstairs life. It doesn't quite translate to American, but it's still really soapy and fun. Like, when you watch Downton Abbey, you had a feeling this guy knows everything down to what the buttons are and the suit and, like, everything. Yeah. Whereas Gilded Age is a bit less authentic, it feels like. But it's still an upstairs-downstairs-esque, although the downstairs part's not nearly as interesting as the upstairs part. Look at the New York City and the Gilded Age and the robber barons, then old money versus new money, love triangles, machinations, lives being destroyed, lots of money at stake, brownstones, giant houses... It's just incredibly fun. It's got a great cast full of Broadway people. It's shot in New York.
It's such a New York production. We were laughing because Christine Baranski and the other woman from The Good Fight are in it. Like the two leads from The Good Fight are both in it, but not together. I feel like you could tell a show that shoots in New York by if Nathan Lane shows up, right? Between Only Murders in the Building and now this, right? Like it's just, I do like the New York production unit, like as a thing. But Connor, I'm right there. We're right there with you. Me and my wife are watching it and just love it. Love it.
One of the actors said that the show was a godsend. And for Broadway actors because they were filming it during the pandemic when they couldn't work.
Oh, wow.
So you'll see big Broadway actors in small parts just because they, you know, they get a nice day rate.
Wasn't Bill Irwin in an episode?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love Bill Irwin. Oh, man.
But all three of us like it. It's fun to, you know, just get lost in a dumb thing. The stakes are low. It's compelling, though. It's compelling in a weird way. There's this historical aspect. There's a lot of characters who are real people. There's characters who are sort of based on real people. Yep. And there's real things that happen in the show. And it's just, you know, there's crazy dresses and hats and bowler hats.
And carriages.
Yep.
And geography.
Is this going to be the things where you just list aspects of things?
But that's the geography.
But anybody who knows us over the years, listen to Goodfellas Minute, you know that A, we love New York City and we also and we love geography and we love roads and we love, you know, transit, right? And so like I do find myself watching the show and they're talking about, you know, they live at the corner of 60th and 5th Avenue, but they're going down to 14th Street or whatever. And I'm like, how long would that take in 1880? Like,
how long to get to Newport?
I keep on doing a lot of currency, like inflation calculator calculations all the time. Yep.
All the time.
That's the best website to have open during any show taking place in the past. I'm constantly checking it.
It's fantastic.
It's like, oh my God, that's $1 million.
We started watching Deadwood together, Lindsay and I was constantly like, ooh. That's a lot of money.
They were just walking around carrying like $50,000 in their jacket.
That's what happened in Around the World in 80 Days, because in the first episode, he makes a bet for £20,000 that he can't travel the world in 80 days. And my wife looked at me, she's like, how much is that now? I do it. I'm like, oh, that's like over $1 million. It's like a lot of money. So yeah, it's pretty good. This show is a delight. It's got just the right level of pretentiousness and high drama and also like much ado about nothing. It's like it's got the right mixture of it all.
I gotta say, like, you didn't watch Downton Abbey, did you, Ron?
I did not.
I mean, there's no reason for you not to watch that show.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. No, I don't think
listening to you right now, I think you'd really like it. because it's all of these things. Well, because here's the thing is when this show first
came out. And it's better.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's true. But when this show first came out, I was kind of excited about it. And I think I had been expecting one thing. I was expecting like a prestige drama about the Gilded Age. And by the way, just for the record, I love the Gilded Age. In terms of American historical periods, I find it fascinating. I've read many.
You mean
books.
The actual Gilded Age, not the show?
Yeah. I mean, I like the show, fine. But
as a time period. Yeah.
Right away, I was like, oh, this is exactly Downton Abbey. And I don't think that I had been expecting it or was prepared for it. And it took me a little. I actually didn't watch the second episode for a while.
How long did it take you to prepare for it? I mean, estimate. How long did it take you?
2-3 weeks before I was like, hold on, I want to keep watching more. So then I ended up watching like.
Well, because it's not a tone that HBO does.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
I just.
Like historically speaking, they don't do like soap opera-y stuff.
I think I was expecting like John Adams for some reason. So I had to recalibrate because I would love.
John Adams is in the show.
Yeah, no.
Not the John Adams, a descendant of his.
I was doing the math. I was like, that doesn't make sense.
But there's a character named John Adams. He's a descendant.
John Adams III, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not as sharp or smart as Downton Abbey. It's not as authentic feeling, but it's a lot of fun.
Doesn't have the cast. You know, it doesn't have the cast. Maggie Smith alone and you know, all that.
They got to figure out a way to make the downstairs more compelling. If they're going to keep spending as much time with them. They're getting better, but everyone has like a mysterious secret and they just reveal it and then they move on to the next person's mysterious
secret. I made that comment yesterday where we were watching the second to last, the penultimate episode of the season, and they showed somebody from the downstairs in the Russell household who has been mysteriously going away, and we saw him like see someone and it like moved the story forward, but with no context or resolution. And I'm just like, okay. I kind of like that. They're like non sequitur plot lines.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of that in Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Like, we're done with this. Yeah. They move along.
It's a short first season, only 9 episodes. So hopefully it's successful. I know there's a second season coming.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing about Downton Abbey, and this is that, like, every single thing that happens on the show is pointless. I mean, like, everything that everyone's upset about is entirely pointless. And it was the same thing, like, Lindsay and I used to, like, Downton Abbey was very compelling, but also it's hilarious. Like, somebody's come down and they have the wrong shirt on for dinner, and then you cut to Maggie Smith and she's just aghast. And then the music sting would come in, and, like, it's like the same kind of thing. And it's so weird. It's one of those things, like, I kind of can't believe that everybody likes it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got to say, Christine Baranski, who, you know, we love on The Good Wife and The Good Fight, is doing a great job, and like the seeping, I don't know, the classism that's happening, and the level of like, we don't talk to them because they're new money or they're not like,
that's what I mean. Like, none of it matters.
The Mrs. Astor character, you haven't seen this yet, but and it's not a spoiler, but she's, you know, talking about that and like talking about someone else in society. And it's like, her family have been landowners for 2 centuries. You know, it's like, unless you were in New York in the 1600s, you're not a real New Yorker. And it's just fascinating given like where we know New York City goes immediately after this, and then also where we are today, and just like how the same themes just keep plaguing, you know, our country and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
It's just fascinating. It's just fascinating.
But now it's 10 years. You have to be there for 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's a lot less than being there in the 1600s.
All right. So now Josh and I are going to talk for the next 30 minutes.
All right. I'm going to go to sleep then.
I was very excited when I heard about the upcoming show Winning Time, which we all know should be called Showtime. But if we think about premium cable networks, it's going to become very clear why that is a thing.
But it also works out because they're not planning on stopping with the Showtime era. So now they can keep going with the same title.
Really? Are they going to get to Kobe and shit?
Well, there's another book about the Kobe Shaq era. So they think they might keep going with like a basketball, The Crown.
So I wasn't fully aware that there was a book that this was based on or whatever. What I was aware is that a year and change ago, I listened to a podcast that Adam McKay did and produced with others, but he hosted it, and I think he was sort of in charge of it, called Death on the Wing. And the idea was that he looked at basketball players who had died, wing players, so shooting guards and small forwards mostly, all these people that, if you know basketball, you know, and they sort of died, and then he would tie those to social issues. And it was the most compelling thing. I could not get enough of it. And then sort of find out sort of not long after that that he was going to do this show about 79, you know, era Lakers, you know, as a drama, I got really excited about it. And then as we started seeing the trailers, I got more excited about it. And then the pilot comes along and You know, I watched it with my wife, who doesn't know anything about this. I've watched, you know, there's a great Bird, I think it's Bird Magic documentary on HBO. Yep. So if you can watch this show on HBO Max, you can go see that. There's a three-part Lakers versus Celtics 30 for 30 on ESPN, which is fantastic. The LA parts are narrated by Ice Cube and the Boston parts are narrated by Donnie Wahlberg. You know, and I'd seen all that stuff. So I was really, it's great. It's really fantastic. And it's one of those things where, like, I watch baseball documentaries and I don't really follow baseball. You know, it's compelling drama. And if you know the game, it's probably that much better. But if not, it's still pretty good. So anyway, all that said, like, this show coming out, I was into it. And my expectations were far exceeded in that first episode because it was just so thoughtful and full. There were so many things to look at, but it didn't feel like it was overwrought, like it was trying to do too many things. First of all, it starts with casting, and you've got these people. You know, we all know what Magic Johnson looks like. We all know how Magic Johnson acts and sounds and moves, and I don't know who that dude is, but they found a guy to play Magic Johnson, and I can't keep my eyes off of him.
Yeah.
He doesn't sound exactly like Magic Johnson, but he's got a smile. There's a scene where they haven't played a lot of basketball yet, actually, but there's a scene where he dribbles up the court, and I was like, he's dribbling like Magic. You can
see.
Well,
they're not planning on really showing a lot of basketball other than.
Right, and, which is fine. Know. I think that that's the better move. But either way, you know, just a magical bit of casting. And then the other bit that I keep going back to, I keep thinking about, is that it came out not long ago that the reason for Will Ferrell and Adam McKay's split was that Will Ferrell wanted to play Dr. Jerry Buss. And Adam McKay was like, no, that's wrong. And then I saw the trailer and I saw that it was John C. Reilly playing him. And I was like, well, what the fuck is the difference? Then the show starts up and I was like, he absolutely made the right call. Will Ferrell is wrong.
Well, yeah. Well, and the split wasn't so much that Will Ferrell was wrong. It's that Adam McKay then cast John C. Reilly and didn't tell Will Ferrell. And John C. Reilly
right.
called Will Ferrell and told him. Like, that was the...
I'm on the...
It's an insane cast. And every time someone yes. shows up, like the third episode when Adrian Brody shows up as Pat Riley...
Oh, that's perfect casting.
You've got John
wow.
C. Reilly, you've got Adrian Brody, you've got Sally Field, you've got Gabby Hoffman.
Why does Jason Clark look exactly like Jerry West?
He looks exactly like Jason Segel, Tracy Letts.
I was looking up pictures.
Yeah, he looks exactly like him.
And I thought, well, has he got appliances on? Or like, how'd they find two guys that have no lips and a wide jaw? It is the weirdest thing. I'm fascinated by it. It's so good.
Josh and I are obsessed. Our buddy Hank, who has been on some shows, he's obsessed. We have a text chain about it. Three episodes have come out so far. I've watched two of the three twice. Everything about it is compelling, from the writing to the directing to the acting, the costumes, the 70s wigs.
Three episodes have come out?
Yeah.
I thought only two. Shit.
Three.
Has it been 3 weeks, or did they do two in 1 week?
3 weeks.
Oh, man. Time is just flying by.
One of the things that works really well is that they're doing this little thing with video formats. Sometimes it's film or whatever, but there's bits where they will switch to what looks like 80s home video.
Oh, that's great. That's cool.
But I know. And like, that sounds like it could be lame, but it's really short with certain insert shots, and it really looks like video from the time.
When that is done right,
yeah.
I find that to be a great asset in a filmmaker kind of toolbox. Like, I think mixed media in video format and resolution and aspect ratio and stuff like that mm-hmm. can really put you in a time.
It's done just right.
Right.
And then, like, there's always politics under the surface. Adam McKay we're talking yep. about, you know? Yep. And so I think that's handled really well, too. In the first episode sort of did it the most, but they did a little bit about coded language, you know, where... They were talking about Larry Bird in one way, and they talked about Magic Johnson in another, and they were like, well, you know, Larry Bird's such a smart player with a high basketball IQ, and you just see the words white, and they go away.
Yeah.
And, you know, Magic Johnson, he's a natural athlete, black, you know, and, you know, to understand that stuff in retrospect is to really understand yeah. what the league was like.
Race is a big factor.
Right, but you're talking about a time where literally, you know, this is David Stern is in this, and, you know, he's the guy who sort of brought the league to the next level. But at this point, like, the league was struggling, and that was because the white guys were boring and the black guys were exciting. But the people in charge were like, I don't know if people want to watch this many black guys. Mm. That's literally, you know, like, it sounds awful saying it, but that's literally what was happening. So the ABA is coming in, and there's a whole different style of basketball. Like, you know, this is a point where the NCAA has said, no dunking. That's too... You know, whatever the coded word for black is, but that's what they meant. And this is when that all changes. You know, this is like, which just goes with the same thing where every time we hear stories now about all of this sort of inherent racism and terrible things that are still happening, I was like, where were you people in the 80s when we were enmeshed in black culture as part of it, and like nobody learned a damn thing from it? It's so strange to me, but like, this is a big part of that happening. So it really, like, in the same way that lots of baseball stories will dovetail you know, with what's happening in American history. This is what happens here. You know, it's a big, important story in a way, but also it's entertaining as hell.
And then this is an inflection point in sports and culture.
Yes.
You're right. I mean, you can take all that aside. It's all there. It's incredibly fun. It's a funny yes. show. It's well written. It's smart. John C. Reilly's going to win an Emmy, or at least he's definitely going to get nominated for one. Like, characters explode off the screen. Quincy Isaiah is playing Magic Johnson. He's incredibly good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so many facets of history between race and culture and sex and sexual politics and class issues.
You know, to that point, too, I think
the mafia.
Gabby Hoffman's character, I think, does a really good job of keeping a thumb on the gender portion of the whole thing.
Yes.
I don't know that I can think of a character like her who is very aware of what's happening, but is also playing the game to a certain extent that she has to and is talking about.
All you could do
it.
Is play the game if you wanted to survive, and
right.
that's her character.
And there's a fourth wall aspect to the show as well, which is handled pretty well. There was a bit in the third episode, though, it threw me for a loop, is that I think John C. Reilly was talking to his mother, and in the middle of the scene, he turned to the camera and talked to us, and I was like, ah, that's a lot, you know. But there was precedent for it. You know, it's all just enough of all those things.
It's very good. Like I said, there's a lot of things I'm watching on Sunday. It's my favorite one. I'm not going to miss that one.
I do plan on watching it. It's on my list. My list is very long right now.
Hank texted us after the show on Sunday and said, I hope this show runs for 25 years.
Yeah, I can't. No, honestly, I can't wait to watch it. I need the Gilded Age to finish. There are three dramas about tech that I'm one episode in on the Dropout, the Theranos one. I'm one episode in on the Uber one. I haven't started the WeWork one on Apple TV yet. Like, there's Connor, like you said, there's a lot of TV right now.
Speaking of TV, I just got a push notification on my phone saying, watch the Gilded Age finale. Well, I can't do it right now, HBO Max.
Because of the patrons. You see, patrons, it's because of you, we are not enjoying the entertainment we like.
I give, and I give,
I give,
and I give, and all I ask for is a blue spot.
Let's move on now. This show is coming out on Thursday before the Academy Awards, which are this weekend. Lots of controversy around the awards this year. We probably won't delve into that. Ron and I are big fans. Josh couldn't care less. But I want to say you humor us.
I'm vaguely aware.
Yeah.
You complain for the most part the whole time, but we're still going to talk about it.
And we should talk. Stay tuned and listen, because we're talking about how you, the patrons, can get involved in the fun too here. So we'll touch on that towards the end.
All right. So last year we did this where we took all the Best Pictures nominees and we ranked them, and then we talked about which one we liked the best. So this year there are 10 nominees, as there almost always is, and I'll just read them out in alphabetical order. I'll not give any weight to any particular film here. It's Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, The Power of the Dog, and West Side Story. Those are your Best Picture nominees. Ron, did you see them all?
I did not. At the time of recording, which is in advance of the awards, so I still have time, I have seen six of them. Six of the 10, so more than half of them.
Which ones are outstanding?
The ones that are outstanding I still need to see are Belfast, Drive My Car, King Richard, and The Power of the Dog.
Okay.
By the way, I cannot think of The Power of the Dog without the Sean Connery, You're the Man Now Dog. It popping in my head.
Huh, I wouldn't have gone there.
Yeah. Josh, which ones have you seen or have you not seen? Yeah, let's do that.
I've seen, not seen, because I'm not looking at the list and I probably should be, but I've seen Belfast, Power of the Dog, Dune, Don't Look Up, and the other one.
Did you see Licorice Pizza? No, that was somebody else I was talking
to. No, a friend of mine, listener of the show, put up a list on Instagram of his favorite, like, Paul Thomas Anderson movies in a row. And I went, yeah, I only like Boogie Nights. I don't like any of these movies. I don't like Paul Thomas Anderson movies. And so I want to. I'm not like, these are terrible. Everybody, like, I just don't. It doesn't work for me. So I've put it off. I've thought about it a bunch of times. But no.
And I saw all of them, all 10. So what we'll do is rank them from favorite to least favorite. And I think it's going to lead into a larger discussion about the state of the year in movies. So I'm going to go first. And I struggled with the ranking. I knew my top two, and I knew the bottom. I changed around the middle quite a bit in the last week. I had it written on a little text file on my desktop, and I kept moving the films around as I thought about them more. So I think this is where I'm ending up.
Nightmare Alley. That was the other one.
My top film of the year of these Best Picture nominees was Coda, followed by Belfast, Drive My Car, then Don't Look Up, Dune, King Richard, West Side Story, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, and then Power of the Dog. And why we're doing this in the first place is because that's how the films are voted on. They do ranked choice for the Best Picture nominees. So they have Academy members rank them, so which is why we're ranking them. We're not Academy members, though, but we should be.
We should be. I mean,
some other kind of members never even heard of.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at. For me, the best picture was Coda. Belfast, Drive My Car were a close second, third. And then it drops off a little bit in the middle. Don't Look Up, Dune, King Richard, I enjoyed. West Side Story was fine. Licorice Pizza, I didn't really like at the end. Nightmare Alley, I didn't really like. And the Power of the Dog, I hated.
Fascinating. Well, so I'm limited because I haven't seen them all, right?
Yeah, but you're the six you've seen.
So I can do the six I've seen. And it's just funny because it just shows you that, like, what brings us together as people are our differences. And I think that's exactly the most important thing.
Yeah, it's all art.
Connor, you're one of my most beloved people. Josh, you too sometimes.
I'm right here.
One of the things I love is when all three of us are all on the same page and love something. But I also love when we all disagree. And hearing your lists, I had to be like, why am I even friends with this guy? So if I had to rank mine, I'm going to go, what, you go first to last? Is that how we do it?
Yeah. Well, if you want, you can do whatever you want.
So I
do it from middle out.
I would go, I'll do middle out. Why not? Okay. So definitely King Richard.
No, middle out.
Middle out. Middle out. God, that first season of that show was so good. Oh, man.
Dick to dick.
Yeah. All right. So I would probably rank mine from most enjoyed to least. Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, Coda, Dune, West Side Story, Don't Look Up.
Okay.
And then if I had to guess without seeing the movies that I haven't seen yet, it would then go Belfast.
You can't do that. You don't know.
Drive My Car, Power of the Dog, King Richard.
You don't even know what half those movies are about.
That's the order that I want to watch them in. So
Licorice Pizza was your favorite.
Licorice Pizza was his favorite before he saw it. You were in love with the trailer and you made your mind up you'd like.
I won't argue that. I mean, I don't know how that's a bad thing. It delivered. Ah, pizza for dinner tonight.
But now you can get licorice delivered because it's a crazy new world.
I will say that
slang for a vinyl record.
I will say that, and part of it might be because, like, I saw Licorice Pizza in the theater at Alamo. Like, it was like closest to like the way things used to be. That you know.
I saw the theater.
This is a thing.
No, I know, but at the time, you know what I mean. Like, I hadn't, you know, like I think I'd just seen Dune in the theater, and then I saw Licorice Pizza. But it just felt like yeah, this is a movie I would have gone to see before I was stuck at home with toddlers in a pandemic. But I gotta say, between Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, Coda, and Dune, like the four of those, I don't want to say matter of inches, but like. Tight. Like, I love Nightmare Alley. I love the genre play of Nightmare Alley. Sure. I loved everything about it. Connor, we're in agreement of our appreciation of Coda. I thought Coda was just a great movie. And Dune, I thought, like, was one that I went in skeptical that, like, won me over because it was just such an experience. And then West Side Story, I'm conflicted about. And then Don't Look Up, I just didn't like as much as you guys did.
So I'm going to go with... And I do think experience had a ton to do with it. It's like whatever you watch the thing at the right time. And you know, the fact is you're right. Like, I don't care about the awards really at all. But I do care about movies. And I think, like, last year there was, like, none of the movies really did anything for me. But this year I'm going to go with Don't Look Up, Nightmare Alley, Belfast, Dune, and Power of the Dog. And I really liked four of those. So it, like Ron said, sort of inches is that I could have moved that middle around a lot. But, you know, just basically, Don't Look Up. Clearly, listen to me. I've been in the mood for Adam McKay. I just thought we had a ton of fun watching it. I thought it was really smart. You know, that sense of humor combined with sensibility and social issues and an insane cast, you know, it was exactly the kind of thing that I wanted to see at that point.
Not the film to watch on Christmas Eve.
No.
No.
Which is what I did.
In terms of Gallows, dark humor.
Or Christmas Day.
Kind of stuff. It, you know, kind of reminded me of 70s to a certain extent, but with a different voice. Nightmare Alley is one that I just didn't expect to care about at all. Oh, and what I said was, I bet Lindsay would like this, because I don't like Guillermo del Toro very much. And I thought it was a horror movie.
When I was trying to talk my wife into watching it, she's like, there's not a character with an eyeball on its hand, is there? Right? I just stopped and thought. I was like, oh, del Toro, right? No, this is okay. It's different. I wish I had seen it, and I still want to. I mean, this is one of the things where, Connor, I'm jealous of you in L.A. and no children and the freedom. Version. Yeah, there's a black and white version running in select cities. So I watched Nightmare Alley on Hulu in my living room as opposed to the theater, and I still loved it, but I would have loved to have seen the black and white version in a theater. Oh, man.
I really thought that almost every shot choice in that was beautiful. Yeah. There were shots where I was like, oh, they're doing your Citizen Kane thing here, there. You know, all the sets, everything was lavish and full. I just really enjoyed that sort of attention to detail in sort of that one way. And I also, you know, in terms of actors, I don't love Bradley Cooper, but he sold me entirely on that. And it was a great cast. You know, Belfast, you know, it was delightful, sad and delightful at the same time. Dune, I really like Dune a lot. I don't know that I could tell you what happened. It's very, very long, but I really loved looking at it and I want to see more. And I do remember, I think we talked about this at some point, but like at a certain point, you're just like, wait a minute. We've been watching this for 2.5 hours and we're not anywhere near the end of this story. And I was like, oh, there's more. It hadn't occurred to me. And then Power of the Dog, I really didn't like at all. I want my time back.
So I guess the question I have is, what was your favorite film of the year? The reason why I ask that is because A, I'm having a hard time picking, because B, it may be a film that wasn't even nominated.
Oh, man, that's a great question. Jeez. Oof.
And I ask that because I think, and then we discussed this on our Patreon hangout. So if you are
yep.
Patron or, you know, thinking about it, we have a 1-hour hangout a month and we talked a lot of time about movies in the last one. It wasn't a great year.
No, you've been on this kick of not being a good year for movies.
I think the last 2 years were rough. I wouldn't have given, I really liked Coda, Belfast, Drive My Car. I wouldn't give any of them 5 stars out of 5.
Wow. Is there a movie that you would give 5 stars that wasn't nominated?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And the only film, I know Josh didn't like this movie, but the film I keep coming back to is possibly my film of the year was The French Dispatch, and I wouldn't even give that 5 stars. But it, you have to go back 2 Oscars to find a film I would give 5 stars to. I'm not the end-all, be-all here. I'm just saying, for me personally, it's been a rough, and the pandemic's been happening, all kinds of things have happened, but
you're not
going to
give The Many Saints of Newark 5 stars?
Connor, can you give us
5 stars conversation.
Can you give us right now as many movies off the top of your head that you would give 5 stars? Go.
Star Wars.
Okay.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Unstoppable.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
I mean, you're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building. It's headed right at us.
Not doing it for you, Josh. Not doing it for you. Glory. You want to keep going?
Yeah,
Star Trek 4.
Star Trek. Oh, the whales.
Rain of Fire.
Citizen Kane. Casablanca.
Is Rain of Fire a 5-star movie?
Yes.
For what it is.
Yes.
For its intention, it's 5 stars.
Yeah. 1917.
Wow.
Yeah. Dunkirk. I mean, look, there's a lot of 5-star movies.
You just give out 5-star movies left and right. I'm shocked you don't
have
them.
I love the movies. I love the pictures.
You're a regular Turner Classic Movies over here.
I'm a member of Turner Classic Movies, so I got the t-shirt.
I bet that Connor would give out less 5 stars than I would.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I think I would give out more 5 stars, but I think that we would have completely different criteria. And okay, the list wouldn't be anything. Well, there would be some.
I would love to do your guys' list of as many 5-star movies as you can. Like, it's kind of like write down the states for out of memory. Yeah. Like, write me a list of all your 5 of all time.
It would be fairly easy for me because I would go and like stand in front of my DVD shelf and go, okay, well, these are all the ones.
No, you can't look. You got to do it.
You can't look. It's got to be off the top of your head. Yeah.
I would think about it.
Anyway, I just think it's been, you know, there was a movie of the year that blew my socks off.
I'll tell you my favorite movie of the year that came out. I think it came out in last year, but I think if I had to pick a number one most fun movie watching experience I had this year, it was The Sparks Brothers.
Oh, that warms my heart. It was such a good movie.
Yeah, no, you were.
I was
totally
just thinking
right
about that. Today I was thinking about that movie again.
That was the one that, again, no idea what it was, no expectations, and as it kept going, it just kept getting better, and it kept getting just more impressive, and I was like, I don't know why this is so long, and I'm okay with it.
Yep.
It's centered around two people who were just fucking delightful to look at and looking at them through the ages. And at the same time, you know, everything that Edgar Wright does right in a narrative film, he did, you know, it was like watching Spaced, but as a documentary to a certain extent. And it was so many clever things that weren't showing off. It was just like the way I think, you know, like it was really, you know, like the references in my head were all happening sort of at the same time. And then at the same time, you know, I worked on documentary, I've worked in archive, like the amount of work that would have gone into building a movie like that from just a footage standpoint, I was impressed by.
Ron, what would you say your favorite film of the year was?
Oh, it's tough.
Licorice Pizza?
I mean, it might still be Licorice Pizza. I mean, you know, yeah. It might be.
Do you think you'll watch that movie again?
Yeah.
Like, you might watch it one more time, but do you think that it'll be a thing you go back to? Because you don't go back to movies that much.
Not as much as I used to, but I might. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's an indicator for me, just because my time watching is so limited these days, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but there's certain things like, I mean, Connor always says, like, if such and such a movie is on, he'll watch it.
Right.
You know, I have a handful of movies that I keep going back to. I keep watching The Social Network.
Yeah.
I keep watching Interstellar. I keep watching, you know, I watch Gangs of New York. Like, there's probably a couple dozen movies that, you know, I won't stop watching ever because I always see something new in them.
I would possibly throw Licorice Pizza in the mix of, like, a Gangs of New York kind of, like, in a, because it's a similar theme in that it's a long movie where the story of the movie is placed within the location and the era as much as any character or any, you know what I mean? Like it's of that time. And
Boogie Nights is a movie I go back to lots of times. It's almost like a thing where, like, if there's a movie that, like, you always are, things that are happening around you always make you think of things from that movie. They're like your touch points for things, you know?
I will say I will go back and watch Alfred Molina in Boogie Nights as much as I can. I love Alfred Molina, by the way. I love him.
Don Cheadle in Boogie Nights is one of my favorite performances in the history of film.
Yeah.
Just sad buck.
It's very
just
good.
Trying to make the best of it.
Yeah. Alfred Molina is just great. Oh, God. So good.
I don't know. I thought it was a weird year. Last year was a weird year.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong.
There's a couple of other movies, too, that aren't in the list that I liked a lot. I loved Stillwater. I always go for Tom McCarthy movies. I really liked The Green Knight. I'm not going to say it was good, but I went and I saw it in the theater by myself.
That's on my list.
Nobody there.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know that I would recommend watching in any other instance than being in a theater where you can't leave. Because it's a weird fucking movie, but I did enjoy it. You know, like, if it hadn't all been right there, I don't know. Like, if I had tried to watch it at home, it might have been really difficult.
Yeah.
Not No Time to Die, Josh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really did like that. I kind of forgot about it, but Bond movies tend to be somewhat forgettable, and I kind of mix them all up in my head after a certain point.
I think what's happening is we're starting to finally see sort of the end game of studios only caring about four-quadrant tentpole films, and I mean, we like those movies, obviously, but it's harder and harder to make other movies that we also like, you know?
Yeah.
Drive My Car, one reason I really like it is because it's just a human drama. Like, Belfast is also a human drama. And
Coda. Well, Coda, yeah. I mean, I said when we were talking at the Patreon Hangout, I was like, Coda feels like a movie they don't really make anymore, really.
Right, yeah.
It worked on that aspect. Like, Connor, I was thinking after that conversation we had, I was thinking, like, where are the movies like Someone Like You?
Right.
Right? You know, like, and admittedly, it came out, like, there was a rom-com, the Jennifer Lopez, Owen Wilson rom-com.
Me and Gordon the intern and the ladies watched it.
Was it any good, or...?
It was terrible, but we had a great time watching it because it's exactly what you want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's harder and harder to find these kind of films that we really enjoy as much as we enjoy Spider-Man or we enjoy Batman.
There's another thing that's happening is that there is a generational shift. Like, we're getting to be old.
Yeah.
And
getting to be.
You know what I mean? But people aren't going to make things. So the people who are, like, in charge of making decisions are different than, I mean, they're of a different generation.
They ain't normal.
There's slightly different sensibilities that go along with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like, people used to hang on to the reins longer, where, like, stuff would be for people in their 40s and their 50s and their 60s, and I think they don't make those movies anymore. This is what Connor was talking about, your tentpole stuff. Like, you know, and there's a different sensibility, a different politics to a certain extent. You know, millennials and Gen Z and all that stuff, it's a different outlook. And I think that there's a lot of things that, you know, they're not for me. You know, I'm like, oh, these are like children's movies, but they're not. Those people are in their mid-30s. You know, I think that's happening, though. And I think we're feeling it, and it's weird.
Yep.
How come I don't like any of these movies? How come nobody likes the movies I like?
Ron and I are excited to watch the Oscars this coming weekend. And Ron, do you want to tell the people listening?
Yeah, so we want all the iFanboy patrons to get in on the game. Every year, Connor and I, one of our favorite things is the Oscar pool, where we do amongst our friends and family, where we do our Oscar picks and see who picks the most ones right. A couple years ago, we extended that to the iFanboy patrons. So if you're an iFanboy patron, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. There'll be a post there for patrons only with a link to the official ballot. You need to enter it by 7 p.m. Eastern time on March 27th in order to be considered in the competition. And the person who picks the most Oscar winners correctly gets to brag about it to your friends.
Yeah, there's no prize.
There's no prize. The prize is the warmth in your heart that you feel for winning. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's occurring to me, and it's only occurred to me relatively recently, that the reason that I get blown out every year is that I have no idea what people would choose. I'm like,
and that's the problem. That's what frustrates you, is that there are two approaches to Oscar balloting. One is, I'm going to vote for who I liked, right? Which, unfortunately, is not the way to win the game.
No, for me, please.
The game is figuring out who's going to win based off of the other award ceremonies, the tone of the press, the way the winds are blowing and stuff like that. And so part of it is that, like, you might have loved West Side Story, but it's not going to win for these reasons, and Coda's going to win for other reasons, and you got to be able to read those tea leaves. But every now and then you get, and Connor, I feel like we've been doing it for years, we're pretty good at it. But every now and then you get a parasite that comes out, and we're like, what the hell? How did that happen? You know, and like that sort of thing.
I know how it works. I just have no idea how to do it. Like, Connor follows that, knows the trick. I have no idea what any of those things are.
Should yes, but it's getting harder to do because the changing nature of the Academy itself.
Yeah.
Yep. It used to be very homogeneous and
easily predictable. Guess
their tastes, but now they've really, in the last couple of years, really opened it up. It's very international. It's a lot younger. So that's why you end up with a Parasite winning Best Picture last year, because there's a lot of voters now who weren't allowed to vote 5-10 years ago. So it's there's some categories, you know, going in, these 4 or 5, they're locks because they've won every award on the circuit. But every year, I think Best Picture is still, and again, because of ranked choice voting, it's often a total surprise. So I'm actually very excited this year to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as we close out this show, I actually thought we'd have more time for emails. So I'm going to give you guys a choice about topic. I got 3 emails here.
Topics.
Topic.
One email is about movies, which maybe we want to stay on that track. One email is about music. And one email is silly. Which one do you want to answer?
What's the first one?
Movies.
Movies, music, or silly?
Silly.
Silly.
You want to do silly instead of movies?
I'm good with silly.
Yeah, no one wants to listen to me and Ron talk about music.
All right, well, Steve from Maryland writes and says, who would win in a team fight? Team 2 Jamokes, Josh Flanagan and Connor Kilpatrick. Team Respect for Women, Tom Cavanaugh and Michael Ian Black. And Team Solo, now available on Blu-ray and digital, Alex Robinson and Pete the Retailer.
That's a Star Wars Minute listener, I can tell you that much.
Ron, you're the judge here, since you're not involved in the battle. Because Ron would find a way to get out of the fight.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would probably give it to you guys, because I feel like at the end of the day, Pete and Alex would fold pretty quickly, and Mike and Tom are celebrities, and the last thing they want to do is get into
an altercation. But Tom is ripped, though.
Yeah, Tom is ripped, yeah, yeah.
Mm. But they're old.
But he did have that hockey injury, Connor, and this now might be the time.
Yeah, and Alex recently had neck surgery.
Yeah, so now you guys just might be healthier.
This would be a bunch of guys in their 40s and 50s.
Yep.
In the middle of a gladiatorial ring, and it would last 2 seconds.
I got to tell you, though, Mike and Tommy Snacks has been on fire of late.
Do you think, does the fight have to be like a physical combat thing? Like,
can it be a battle of wits?
Well, like a battle of wits. Then Tom Cavanaugh.
Okay, if it's Trivial Pursuit, who wins?
That's tough.
I don't know. You got 6 very smart people.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, well, you Alex got knows five, a and a half, 5 and a half, Connor, yeah. Let's be honest. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what the categories that come up. I think that's a toss-up.
I know a shit ton of stuff, and I can't remember any of it.
Yeah.
That's where I would fall apart. I would give it to Alex and Pete. Between the two of those, history and pop culture, and also Pete's got sports.
Yeah, Pete does have sports, yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Good question.
I can't speak to Mike and Tom on those subjects, but I feel like they either know more or less than you would think.
The question is, how many questions are about Canada?
Yeah, Canadian history and whatnot. All right, Connor, quick, do the movie question. We got time.
All right, Ken J from the Great White North,
Canada.
You may regret this. What is the better movie, Goodfellas, The Godfather, or Jaws?
Oh, well, that's, I mean...
Oh, wait, though. No. Go ahead, Ron. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that's very difficult, I was going to say. That's all.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to be like, no, it's all... They all do different
things. Exactly. That's, yeah. Yeah.
We all have stories.
I mean...
Okay, so go gut, though. Like, what's your first instinct? My first instinct has changed 6 times, so I don't remember what it is.
I mean, if I had to rank them right now, like, watch them in order. It's Goodfellas, Jaws, Godfather. And that doesn't take away from The Godfather. I'm not saying Jaws is a better film or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, all of these films are great films.
Yeah, so, yeah. These are clearly 5-star films.
Yes.
See, because I'm going Godfather, Jaws, Goodfellas.
Wow.
And that's my ranking as well.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Because The Godfather, you're talking about
I'm sorry to interrupt, Josh, but Connor, based on Academy voting, Jaws gets the best picture.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
That's why it's so exciting.
I got to go see The Godfather in the theater on my birthday.
That's great.
Wait, did you see the new print?
Yeah.
Oh. Is it good?
Oh, my God. It was amazing.
Oh. It's supposed to be amazing.
And it was just like, usually we would go to a movie on my birthday, which is the end of February, which for those of you who know anything about movie releases would know that there's never any fucking good movies on my birthdays. It's awful rough. Last year we rented a theater and we watched Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep.
And that was, you know, very good.
5 stars.
And this year we were looking at all the available movies and Lindsay goes, look at The Godfather's playing. And she kind of brushed over it. I was like, whoa, 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 what? and
what's the problem?
The theater was surprisingly full. And I don't say that as a complaint. I was actually like, all right. Because I've been to other revivals. You know, like I went to see a new print of Goodfellas a few years ago, pre-pandemic, and there was nobody there. And I was like, oh my God, you people. You know, but, you know, however long that movie is, you don't feel it. And it just, that's one of the ones that I've been back. You know when you know, like, individual beats all the way through a movie? I mean, we could say that about Jaws, Goodfellas, and Godfather, so it's hard to do it. But that, to me, is one of the first ones that, you know, was a success on every possible level and continues to be. You know, without Godfather, there is no Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Really.
I don't disagree.
It also launches several careers.
Yeah.
Several all-time careers.
Yes. Yes. You know, Jaws almost feels like a different category, so you can't rank them that way. But if I had... The funny thing right now is if you asked me, Josh, what's your favorite movie, I would say Jaws. But I was just about to say, if I had to get rid of one of the movies, I would keep The Godfather. You know, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's hard. It's hard.
Question.
Yeah, great question. We're glad we did it. There you go.
He hit us where we live.
Honor? Wait, what's your... you said the same as me.
Yeah. Same ranking.
My
Godfather. I mean, I love all three films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all films, like you guys said earlier, if they're on TV and I come across them, I'm stopping.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them all dozens of times. I used to watch The Godfather weekly in my early 20s.
You know, I studied two of them in college, and we did a whole show about one of them.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, I'm not disagreeing, and I, you know, Godfather is a you know, I cannot wait, by the way, talk about The Deluge of TV. The Offer on Paramount Plus is going to be fantastic, or Trainwreck, but either way is going to be great.
I think Trainwreck.
I don't...
But the thing about it, what always got me is that, you know, and also being, you know, growing up in New York, growing up Italian, like, all that sort of stuff, and, like, you know, The Godfather is fictional account that captures the spirit of the early age of organized crime in New York, where
a romantic version.
There. Yeah, exactly. Whereas Goodfellas, you know, really resonated to me because it was, you know, in a time period that I romanticize, as well as, like, based on reality, and, like, those places are real, and, like there's something about that visceralness of it that always connected with me for it. But I will say that my son recently has been going through a big superhero phase, and he's being Captain America, and he's saying America, America, and so I'm trying to get him to say I believe in America. So and he looks at me like I'm a weirdo and then runs away. So
I mean, yeah.
So there you go. Thanks for writing in, Ken and Steve. The email address is contract@fanboy.com. That's so you can get your email in on the show. Make sure you put Media Explode in the title or the subject of the email so we know that it's for this show. Thanks to all who write in. So that's it. That's it for this month's show. Thanks again to the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Look for that email or that post about the Oscar pool if you want to join.
The more the merrier. We'd like as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. It's, and, you know, there's no stakes. It's fun. Josh is going to do it. He's going to lose, but he's going to have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Wait, I was told there would be steaks.
Yeah, there are no steaks.
Delicious grilled steak. You're right, because the price of beef is insane.
So there you go. We'll be back next month. You can always listen to our weekly Pick of the Week show, in which Josh and I talk about the week's comics. You can listen to our monthly shows that were also unlocked by the patrons, the Talksplode and Booksplode shows that alternate every month. The Booksplode show is a review of a collected edition comic book. The Talksplode show is Josh's interview show. You can listen to Ron and All About Android talking about phones every week.
Every week.
Every week.
Every week?
I like our running bit is where we don't know or care about his show.
It's fine.
Yeah, so that's where you can find us. You can find us online at fmo.com.
I don't know that it's a bit.
I've done over 500 of those shows, by the way.
Well, that's like if you listen to the Always Sunny podcast, is that neither Rob nor Charlie have watched Glenn Howerton's NBC show, AP Bio.
Nice.
They don't even acknowledge it. It's an NBC show, and they're just like,
good for you. Yeah.
Literally at one point, one of them goes, you still do that? Like, and they were serious.
And hopefully we'll be back next month. It's all to you patrons, whether or not we are back next month. Hopefully we are. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone.
nothing on TV.